Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. We do have a quorum. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the February 12th, 2019, meeting of the Government Operations Committee. I noticed it does actually say on the minutes February 11th, so that should be changed to 12. So with that change, could I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Representative Nelson moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. We've approved the minutes. Just wanted to let members know that two bills have been returned to us from the Subcommittee on Elections, House File 40, Restore the Vote, and House File 489, Free Transportation on Election Day. We will be taking up House File 40 on Tuesday. That's been added to the agenda for Tuesday. It was yesterday. And then House File 489, maybe a week or so later, although we haven't exactly figured that out yet. The first bill on the agenda is House File 608, Representative Sandsted. Welcome to the committee, Representative Sandsted.
Good morning.
Yes, I will move that House File 608 be re-referred to the General Register, and I understand you have an author's amendment on this one to put the bill in the shape you like.
I do.
Okay, I will move the author's amendment. Is there any discussion of the amendment? Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. The bill is in the shape you like. Representative Sandsted, if you could please describe your bill and introduce your testifier.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. In front of you, you have House File 608. 608, as amended, makes various technical changes to St. Louis County's Civil Service Commission contained within Chapter 383C. This chapter of law and this bill before you today apply only to St. Louis County. The bill's purpose is to modernize the statute originally enacted back in 1941 to reflect today's civil service and workforce realities. You should have a letter in your packet signed by the work group participants and the affected bargaining units from the county regarding this language. Last session, this bill received unanimous support in this committee and it reached the House floor. It did not, however, receive a floor vote before we adjourned in May, so we're back at it again this session to ask for your approval. Members, today with me I have Jim Gottscheld. Jim is the Director of Human Services for St. Louis County. Jim will briefly summarize the bill, the particulars of the legislation, and a bit of history of this bill. Mr. Gottscheld.
Welcome to the committee. If you could please just state your name once more for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you and good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Jim Gottscheld, Director of Human Resources for St. Louis County.
Go ahead.
St. Louis County has 1,850 employees stretching from Duluth through the Iron Range cities and all the way up to Ely. They're represented by 11 different bargain units. And with a land mass of over 7,000 square miles, St. Louis County is not only the largest county in Minnesota, it's also the largest county in the United States east of the Mississippi River, which is one of the great opening discussion things that we talk about with new candidates or applicants that we like to share with individuals and celebrate. Something that we don't necessarily celebrate is we also have one of the oldest employment systems in the state of Minnesota and is the last county in Minnesota that has a civil service employment system, an employment system that has largely remained unchanged since 1941. Back in 2017, St. Louis County convened a labor management committee made up of representatives from all 11 bargain units, management members as well, and we started working on changes to our civil service employment law. And we operated under a consensus decision-making model, which means everything in the bill before you today has 100% consensus of all the representatives from our collective bargaining units in addition to our county board. In your packets, you should have a slide deck. Looks like this. And I do have some talking points. Just want to go over some real high-level discussion items.
Yeah, I don't believe we were given that ahead of time, actually, so if you could just sort of summarize the contents. We can subsequently make photocopies, or if you have copies, if you could just hand them.
I did bring copies.
Oh, great. Thank you for being prepared. So if you could just make sure the pages have them, then they can hand them out to committee members.
So I'll just start with, over the years, St. Louis County has worked to try to make it adjustments or amendments to the civil service employment law. Unfortunately, many times it resulted in not achieving support at the legislative level because our employees were not on board. That has been resolved through the labor management process and kind of starting going about it totally differently. So I believe just what everyone should have copies of the presentation. The second page on the slide deck addresses the goal. And our goal is to become an employer choice so we can recruit and develop the best possible workforce. And this is a goal that was adopted by our county board in 2008, which was the last time that we made an attempt to revise our civil service employment law. The next slide identifies what the themes are. Largely, these are technical updates. As you can imagine, being that the employment law has not been updated since 1941, we still have a great deal of transition language that was created to help put the employment system in place. So we're going to be deleting a lot of that transition language that has no purpose going forward. We're also deleting other obsolete provisions, things like preparing salary schedules after the adoption of the classification plans, and how employees had to compete for their own positions after the law was put in place. There's also a number of redundant and unnecessary language that we did housekeeping on. We wanted to revise the civil service employment law to reflect our current practices. We wanted to make the law easier to read, more clear to understand. And I will reserve the rest of my testimony to identify at a high level the substantive changes that we're proposing to the law. Section 4 addresses duration of probation periods, lines 512 through 526, add full-time equivalent qualifier to the duration of 6 and 12 calendar months. We have quite a few part-time employees, and we want to make sure that we have a probationary period that's adequate to evaluate their performance. And so the business practice has been to utilize the full-time equivalent of a half-time employee is roughly 1,000 hours. And we just want to make sure that the law represents that. There's also a maximum duration that's been extended to 24 calendar months. Section 5 of the bill, line 710, adds deputy directors to the unclassified service. The unclassified service individuals are unrepresented employees. They're not participating in any of the bargaining units. The deputy directors will be reviewed on a case-by-case basis, largely when the positions are vacated. In some cases, there might be positions that have incumbents, and our commitment to the bargain units where we would make sure that the individual who is the incumbent was a willing participant in that process. In Section 9, lines 9-2 through 9-4, increases the duration in which a former employee may request reemployment following resignation in good standing. I think that's just a best business practice today, that sometimes great employees explore other employment opportunities, and sometimes they realize that it was a great employer to work for and they want to come back, and we want to provide that opportunity a little bit beyond the first 12 months. On the next page, Section 13, lines 11, 27 through 12, 2 outlines the order of how our candidates are going to be referred for promotional employment opportunities. And lines 12, 7 through 12, 17, the order referrals for employment opportunities that are open to the public. So this really gets into the meat of some of the changes that we're proposing. As you can imagine, when you have employees who are competing for very few coveted promotional opportunities, it makes sense to refer the top three. And the top three are determined by the assessment process that's done by the Human Resources Department, which places a huge burden or emphasis on those screening tools and the evaluation criteria. And I think we can all agree that sometimes great employees may not be the best test takers, and so we want to give more emphasis to the interview itself. And so by making a revision to increase the top three persons or the top seven persons referred to the top three scores for promotional, and anyone with the same score as that third person, or on the open, the top 20 scores and the same anyone with the same score as that 20th person, there's many more options, and it places less emphasis on the scoring criteria. Lines 1230 and 1231 increase the max duration of temporary appointments from 2 to 6 months. Presently, our collective bargaining agreements have limitations of 3 months, so anything more than 3 months we'd have to collectively bargain for. But it does give the employer a little more latitude to have longer duration individuals if they're working on special projects or maybe seasonal employment in our public works department. In section 14, line 139 through 1316, adds the ability to transfer probationary employees under limited circumstances. Today we require them to be a permanent member of what we call the classified service, meaning they have to have passed their probation period. There are certain circumstances in such a large county, and I'll use our public works department as an example. You know, we might hire a handful of equipment operators, and just based on their availability, they may have been referred to one location but not another. And you might have people who live in Duluth who are driving to Floodwood and people in Floodwood who are driving to Duluth. And it doesn't make sense after some time, as long as they're within the same job class and the same department, they're probably going to be under the same supervisors. We would permit employees to transfer under those circumstances. And that is a very high-level summary of the substantive changes. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. And thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gottschall. Yeah, that was very thorough. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a really quick question for Representative Sancy. The author's amendment in striking Section 20 strikes out the changes proposed in the criminal penalty section, moving it in the original text, you were going to move it from a gross misdemeanor to a misdemeanor for violation. In striking that, it would leave it as a gross misdemeanor, and I'm just wondering if you think that's because the crime is that serious, or why the author is wanting to leave it as a gross misdemeanor.
Representative Sandstead.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, I'm going to turn that over, but my understanding originally in this was just that this language has never been utilized. They've never, you know, filed any kind of charges. It's never been used. And, again, it's in the scope of just kind of modernizing or updating the bill. But if Mr. Gottschall has anything to add, I'll let him go ahead and do that.
Mr. Gottschall.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zerwas, the reason why we are going to back off of that proposed changes, the Labor Management Committee, when it proposed that reduction from a gross misdemeanor to a misdemeanor, candidly, they didn't realize that that would require another committee approval for that one update. And frankly, we think that probably really put us up a hard timeline to get the bill pushed through last year. As Representative Sandstead mentioned, this is not something that has ever resulted in charges. And even though when we evaluated similarly situated cities and counties and even police commissions, the gross misdemeanor is not something that is common, we didn't feel it was necessary to risk this being delayed yet a second year. The committee worked really hard to make this bill possible, so we just don't want to have any unnecessary delays.
Representative Zerwas?
And I can completely appreciate the schedule that you're trying to navigate in getting the bill through. I would wholly support lowering the penalty from a gross misdemeanor to a misdemeanor. I mean, it seems silly to have it in statute as a gross misdemeanor. And so to be clear, by striking this, you're leaving it as a gross misdemeanor. I mean, that's your prerogative, but it sounds like this has never been charged out in practice anyway. So it's in statute. It's just not, has never been enforced.
Representative Zerwas, that could be your first bill relating to the St. Louis County Civil Service Commission.
No, I'm gonna leave this one for Representative Sandstead.
Any comment? I think that sounded like more of a comment. Are there any other questions from members? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Sandstead?
Members, I just want to remind you this bill really is just a modernization. I also want to just mention this is really the result of over 10 years of work and lift between labor and management, really kind of fleshing out what they can agree on and what they don't disagree on. And it moved through committee last year. I'd ask you for your support this year, and thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Okay, I'll renew my motion that House File 608, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. Could all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Your bill is on its way, Representative Sandstead. So next on the agenda is House File 619, which is also Representative Sandstead's bill. I will move that House File 619 be re-referred to the General Register. And do we have that amendment? Yeah. So I spoke, Representative Sandstead approached me this morning. They had discovered an issue with this bill that required an amendment. It did not meet the 24-hour rule. I discussed this briefly with Representative Zerwas before committee started. It does appear to be a technical change, but I will wait until it's handed out. So, and actually maybe, I don't know, Representative Sandstead or Ms. Dyson could sort of explain it while it's being handed out, and then we can decide how to proceed. Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House File 619, if you look on the second page of the bill in Section 2, it on line 2.11, it refers to the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, and the legislature has restructured that as a state department with a commissioner, and so the amendment, the H0619A2 amendment, takes out the reference to the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board and inserts the Commissioner of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation or the Commissioner's designee as a member of the Central Iron Range Sanitary Sewer District. And this was an amendment that was actually adopted in committee last year before the bill left the committee and went to the House floor, but the bill as introduced this year was the Senate version, and so that didn't have that correction. So this is to, again, make that correction.
Okay. Representative Zerwas, it does appear, I mean, to me to be technical, just updating the name of the agency involved here, but I will defer to your thoughts here.
Mr. Chair, looking this over, I'm wondering if Ms. Dyson could read through what the new language would be on. I'm looking at on line 1.5 of the amendment. If we strike on page 2, line 13, if we delete, looks like the new language, use of the word member, so it would say, except the appointed by the IRRB. I'm just on.
Representative Zerwas, it looks, well, I'll let Ms. Dyson explain.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zerwas, on the amendment, it says page 2, line 13, delete member, and then you delete line 14 altogether.
Okay.
And then insert. So it would read, except the Commissioner of the Iron Range, or except the Commissioner of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation, or the Commissioner's designee.
Thank you very much for that. Mr. Chair, what's the path for this bill? Does this bill go to another committee, or does this go to the GR?
It's just going to the General Register, right?
All right. Knowing that there's not additional committee stops, and the only time to make this change is in this committee, Mr. Chair, we have no problem making this technical amendment at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. I appreciate that. So with that understanding, I will move the A2 amendment to put the shape in Representative Sandstead would like. Any additional discussion? Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. The bill is in the shape you like, Representative Sandstead. If you could please describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 619 corrects an oversight in the statute which established the Central Iron Range Sanitary Sewer District in 2003. The district includes the cities of Buell, Chisholm, and Kinney, and the towns of Balkan and Great Scott. Legal counsel for the district had pointed out that the original enabling legislation did not allow for people on the governing bodies of the municipalities, whether mayors, council members, or township supervisors, to serve on the district's board of directors. Despite this, throughout the history of the board, these local leaders have served on the board. House File 619 corrects this to allow these individuals to serve on the board. District staff has pointed out that there has been very little interest from regular citizens in serving on the board, and absent the ability to have elected officials serve on it, the board may not be able to carry out its administrative functions. This bill also permits these appointments retroactively. As we've saw through the amendment, the bill updates the statute to reflect the current name of the Minnesota Discovery Center, formerly Iron World and Chisholm. And during last session, this bill passed the Senate 63-1, but unfortunately, again, the time ran out, clock ran out in May, and it was not heard. So we're back for round two.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Sandstedt. Are there any questions from members? Okay. Seeing none, did you have any closing remarks, Representative Sandstedt?
I'd appreciate your support.
Okay. Thank you. I'll move that House File 619 be re-referred to the General Register as amended. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay, the bill is on its way. Thank you, Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you.
I think I saw Representative Schultz come in. Okay, while they are coming down, I will move that House File 873 be re-referred to the General Register. This bill relates to one of the more unusual chapters of Minnesota statutes that I've seen. I was not even aware there were statutes that used the word Portorama, but I will let Representative Schultz explain the origin of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm Representative Schultz. This is House File 873, and I believe in your packets you have some news articles. One is called Portorama that talks about the original reason why they celebrated Portorama, and then a recent article printed, I think, within the last week from the Duluth News Tribune. So Portorama is currently in state statute, and it's a misdemeanor for misuse of the word. It was started in 1960, a celebration of the port, to celebrate the completion of the first year as a World Trade Center. And they had a giant parade, a carnival, and about 100 other activities. But it was sponsored by the Duluth JCs, which is the Junior Chamber of Commerce. And so I had no idea. This was before I was born. So they no longer celebrate this event. And a constituent contacted me and asked to take it out of state statute because some other organizations may want to use this term. And so I contacted the chamber. They are no longer interested in protecting this and would like to see this language removed from state statute.
Are there any questions from members? Or did you have any testifiers on this interesting issue? Okay. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was, after looking at the last bill and this bill, I think former Representative Biskins, who always had a goal to make the size of our law books smaller, that these two bills go a long way to doing that, because they both are taking a lot more out than they're putting back.
Yes, I know that was also a goal of the unsession that we had a couple years ago. I'm surprised this provision was not caught during that whole discussion. Are there any other member questions or comments? Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so someone approached you, but there aren't plans for a Portorama festival?
There may be.
In the works.
Representative Schultz.
There may be. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There possibly could be, but it's very private information that I'm not privy to. So it may happen. I mean, we do have to celebrate this port. Back in 1960, when they initiated it, the economic benefits were over $60 million to $100 million. Now it's in the billions of dollars. So it's the most active port in the state of Minnesota and in our region. So it's very vital to not just the Duluth Superior community, but the whole state of Minnesota.
Representative Zerwas?
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, Representative Zerwas, I mean, I don't know if there are any ports in Elk River, but if you ever want to host an event and call it Fortorama and this does become law, you will be able to do so without fear of prosecution.
Mr. Chair, I'm afraid if I throw a Fortorama, I'm going to have 300 Biffies show up. So we're gonna hold off in Elk River, I think.
Okay. Are there Representative Salk?
And our just as we're approaching this, which I think is all warranted and everything, we do have to be careful of that this hasn't triggered a trade names distinction, because the constant use of a trade name that nobody is otherwise challenging can become a federal protected use for that word. So I would only say let's be certain that we aren't releasing rights to something we don't have the power to do that. So that, I mean, I've been around trade name protection a lot when running my business, and I know you can sometimes trip across that. So if you haven't looked at it, I would say it's useful maybe before we think we've done something that we don't have in our power.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this doesn't in any way modify the trademark, if there is a trademark, with federal law. So we're just removing it from state law. So we have similar things that are protected in state law, like the Minnesota Zoo and the Minneapolis Aquatennial Festival. But if there is a federal trademark, that would remain in place, and the organizations that, if they're interested in using the word, would have to go and waive that.
Yeah. I believe I said in my statement that if Representative Zerwas wanted to host a Portorama event, he could do so without fear of state prosecution. So he might need to still be aware of the possibility of federal prosecution, though. So, are there any additional member questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks? Representative Schultz.
I just thank members of the committee. And it's sometimes interesting to look at our history and what we've celebrated in the past.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Schultz. I'll renew my motion that House File 873 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. The bill is on its way. So next up, we have two. There are two identical bills, House File 826 and House File 562. Representatives Lislegard and Fabian, I understand, are going to present them together. It's my intention to move House File 826 to the Veterans and Military Affairs Committee, and then hold over House File 562, just so members are aware of what's going on. So just to start, I will move that House File 826 be re-referred to the Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs. Welcome to the committee, Representative Lislegard, if you'd like. And I should mention, too, we had a discussion in that among certain members that we should probably maybe not expect freshmen to present treats to the committee. So I specifically directed Representative Lislegard not to. So if you have any concerns with that, you should take it up with me and not with Representative Lislegard. And Representative Quam, I see you've raised your hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is, you know, staff, what is the process for recalling a chair and putting a more friendly chair in?
Representative Quam, you should take that up with the speaker. Representative Lislegard, if you'd like to begin the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It is truly my honor to bring before you House File 826, a bill urging the President of the United States to hold a state funeral for the last surviving World War II Medal of Honor recipient. The intended purpose of this would be to honor all 16 million men and women of the military who served during the war, including 326,000 Minnesotans. Unfortunately, there is some urgency to this request. As of now, there are only four surviving Medal of Honor recipients from World War II, and the youngest of them is 92 years of age. As the sun sets on the greatest generation, we must make extra effort to salute those who stood against the greatest threat to our freedom and democracy the world has ever seen. I ask that, as representatives, you help not only let them hear your voice, but voices of all Minnesotans in this effort. We would be leading this nationwide initiative, and I can't think of a better way for Minnesotans to keep their reputation as leaders. With that, Chairman and members, I would turn it over to my friend and colleague, Representative Fabian to say a few words before we ask Lee Eggstrom, who has been working on this since last session.
Thank you, Representative Liz Lagarde. Welcome to the committee, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to sit here with my good friend, Representative Liz Lagarde. For those of you that don't know, he's got a lot of family ties up in my area, in Pine Creek and Ross area. So
don't hold that against me.
And before I start, I want to thank Mr. Gehring for helping out with the language for the resolution. And just a minor correction in your comments, Mr. Chair. The bills are not identical. They're identical in the intention, but there are some differences in the language in the bill. And if you look at both of those, you will see that there are some differences. I would say that, Dave's done a great job, excuse me, Representative Listergaard did a great job of kind of setting the table here for us. But what I want to do is, number one, I want to recognize a few people back in the district that I represent. Don Leslie from Warren, Minnesota, started this conversation with me about doing this, and then Mark Kraulik from the Stephen area contacted me, and then I got contact by Mr. Edgertrum, who's going to be testifying. I think the two biggest differences in the bill, if you take a look at the two bills side by side, and you look at on House File 562, line 1.19 and 1.20. At the end of 1.19, there is one part added to the sentence, including but not limited to having the option to lie in state in the rotunda of the United States Capitol. If you look at House File 826 and you look at line 2.18, you will see that there's no mention there of the option to lie in state in the Capitol, and this obviously would be to recognize everybody. So my suggestion, Mr. Chair, is that we're going to have some testifiers here. I would encourage you to direct House staff to work with our veterans here who brought this idea to us to make sure that there's an amendment at the next committee stop to get the resolution the way that we want it, the way that they want it, excuse me. And then also, Mr. Chair, I know that the companion bill to Representative Liz Lagarde's bill is Senator Bingham, and the companion bill in the Senate on my bill, and I guess we're not supposed to mention that body here, but I'm going to anyway, is Representative Johnson, excuse me, Senator Johnson. So maybe there needs to be a coordination so that we have just one product in the end. So with that, you know, the 326,000 veterans that Representative Liz Lagarde mentioned in his opening comments, my dad was one of those 326,000. I currently have two sons who are active duty. I proudly wear a pin for the Red Bulls. My oldest son is currently deployed to Kuwait with the 34th Infantry Division headquarters. My youngest son is an Air Force Academy graduate and is currently serving at the Eglin Air Force Base in Fort Walton Beach, Florida. Would be kind of nice to be there, but I can't ride a snowmobile down there. So with that, Mr. Chair, if it pleases you, I would like to have our testifiers come up probably first. Mr. Don Kerr, who's the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, and then Lee Edgerstrom, who's the co-coordinator of the Minnesota chapter of the State Funeral for World War II Veterans, and John Kramer, who's been in contact with us as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Fabian, and thank you for the clarification about my remarks about the bill. I would presume that Representative Liz Lagarde would be open to an amendment in the Veterans Affairs Committee related to the line you mentioned, and that actually seems like a question that the Veterans Affairs Committee would be uniquely, probably more qualified, honestly, to handle than this committee. Representative Liz Lagarde?
Most definitely.
Okay, sure. So as if you could just work with Representative Fabian as this bill moves through the process to address that issue and potentially have an author's amendment in the Veterans Committee, I think that would be a good way to proceed.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and
thank
just you. For the record, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Fabian.
I'm a co-author on Representative Liz Lagarde's bill,
sure,
as well. So.
Yes,
this isn't about Representative Liz Lagarde and myself. This is about honoring
326,000
and 16 million soldiers.
Absolutely, and the Veterans Affairs Chair requested House File 562, so that's the main reason I decided to move that one forward. So welcome to the committee. If you could please just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the executive director of the Department of Military Affairs. We're the state agency that oversees the National Guard, and we are your state military force. We're here to speak in favor of the concept of the two bills. I won't play favorites and ask to either one. And however the legislative branch wants to work that out, that's fine with us. But our military culture is very steeped in tradition and ceremony, and it's very important to us. And we certainly see this as a wonderful opportunity to recognize the greatest generation in a very specific way, in a very timely fashion. But clearly, there are only four surviving Medal of Honor recipients from World War II that remain, and they aren't going to be around forever. This is something that I think is very useful to try to spur action on the federal level to make them aware of that and to probably put the wheels in motion to do something that's right for our veterans and do something that will serve to motivate and inspire our current military service members. And that's our interest in the bill, and we strongly support it.
Yeah. Thank you, Director Kerr. Additional testimony, if you could just please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Lee Iggerstrom, and as you can probably guess, I'm mostly retired these days. But my colleagues, Don Leslie and Mark Krulik, and I see this as an opportunity to accomplish two things at the same time. For one, it is the honor that the representatives have commented on here, but the second is that it goes almost to the heart of educating future generations of Minnesotans. And that, to grandparents such as myself, is a very important thing. And the only thing I'll add, because you've got all of the materials in front of you, the only thing I'll add is explain that my earliest childhood memory was BJ Day. And the reason for that was, and why I remember, I was 2.5 years old, and I had a baby sister at home. So my two grandmothers and the neighbor ladies gathered in our household, listening to the news on the radio, and hugging and crying. That is a frightening scene for a toddler. But as time went on, I obviously knew that those were tears of joy that I saw that day, because three uncles would be coming home from the war, and an aunt and a grandfather would be coming home from Los Angeles, where they were building airplanes in a defense plant. A moment, you know, it was a monumental moment. And so all these years later, you know, I still keep thinking what Tom Brokaw spoke of as the greatest generation. And this is one of those rare moments where an old, retired, nonpartisan journalist can actually add voice to something. And here's what's really nice for all of you. No appropriation is required.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Eggerstrom. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is John Kramer. I'm a chairman of the Minnesota Medal of Honor Memorial, a memorial that has been approved by the legislature that's going to be built at the main entrance at the far end of the mall. I have been actively involved and in contact with many of the Medal of Honor recipients. They were here for a kickoff event for the 2016 Medal of Honor Convention, as some of you will recall. I have taken the initiative to understand a little bit more about some of the details that would be involved in having a state funeral, as was proposed, and then also having the last living Medal of Honor recipient lying in state at the nation's capital rotunda. There have been historically two Medal of Honor recipients that have been distinguished with that honor. One being General Douglas MacArthur, and then more recently Senator Daniel Inouye, Senator from Hawaii, who was a World War II Medal of Honor recipient. I would mention to all of you that so the precedent is there for consideration of the last living recipient being considered for lying in state at the rotunda, it makes sense that since our Medal of Honor recipients are honored by the president with the president's salute at a formal gathering ceremony at the White House, that likewise with the passing of the last of the 353 World War II Medal of Honor recipients, that that honor should be extended to that last one. On behalf of all of the recipients, all of the 16 million World War II military combatants and participants.
Sure. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kramer, for your testimony. Are there any questions from members? Are there any additional testifiers who would like to speak on this bill? Okay. Seeing none, Representative Nelson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I had a question for Mr. Kearns. According to what we have here from the House research, it says General MacArthur was the last non-president, and now we hear Daniel Inouye, but he was honored at state funeral. But I seem to remember when General Omar Bradley passed away, and I'll just put a little background. My brother was a member of the old guard at that time, and he was back here on leave, and he was on call because if General Bradley had passed away, he would have to go back for the funeral. Was his a state funeral, or was that just a military funeral?
Director,
and you may not know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I believe it was a state funeral, but General Bradley was not a Medal of Honor recipient. General MacArthur was from World War I, actually.
Okay, that may be the difference, yeah.
Okay, thank you, Representative Nelson. Are there any additional questions or comments? Okay, I don't see any, so I will renew my motion that House file, let me make sure I get the right one, 826, be re-referred to the Committee on Veterans Affairs. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. I will also lay House File 562 over. So I think that concludes. Yes, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking over the amended minutes for February 12th, Representative Heinrich brought to my attention that although he doesn't say much, he was here. It is not listed under members present or under members excused. But but he counts. He's new, but he so we just want to make sure that the minutes appropriately reflect our freshman member attended.
Should we vote on that?
Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Representative Zerwas, I will take that as a motion to reconsider the minutes with the addition of Representative Heinrich, who did actually speak that day as well, if I remember correctly. So any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the re-amended minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, the motion carries. Opposed?
Aye.
Well, the ayes outnumber the one lone nay. So the motion carries the amended minutes. Thank you for catching that. Are there, let me see, should I mention? I know the agenda has been posted for Tuesday. I know there, I believe there was a bill, House File 40 was added and another bill was removed. So you can all go online and read that at your pleasure. I think we posted next Thursday. The next Thursday should be posted shortly as well. So thank you, members. This committee is adjourned.